Hi, today is March 2nd. I'm Goldie, and welcome to episode 9 of the Diamond Hands podcast. Today's episode is going to be all about my positions that I'm holding, why I'm long these positions, and why you shouldn't just blindly copy them. As always, remember that I am not a financial advisor, and nothing contained on this show or in any future shows should be considered financial advice. Okay, so what does my portfolio actually look like? It's broken down into three main categories. I've got my tax-free savings account, the TFSA. I've got my RRSP, the Registered Retirement Savings Plan. And then I have a non-registered investment account. In addition, I also have a house that I'm working on paying off and my work pension. But I don't really lump those two in because, I mean, one, if I want to get any equity out of my house, I have to sell the house. And then where am I going to live? I'd have to move somewhere else. And two, the pension is entirely out of my control. So that's kind of like a non-factor. It's nice to have, and I'll get into that later, but it's not really something that I consider a investment that I have active control over. I'm not a huge fan of discussing exact dollar values of somebody's personal finances, but I absolutely will share the percentages that my various investments or my various stocks and ETFs that I'm long on do make up of my portfolio. Overall, the ETFs VFV, XQQ, and QQQ make up about 85% of my portfolio. Roughly 45% is VFV, and about 20% is QQQ, and 20% is XQQ. This leaves the individual stocks that I have to make up the remaining 15% of my portfolio. If you were to break down these individual stocks as if they were their own portfolio, they would be weighted somewhere around 60% Microsoft, 15% Apple, 20% Visa, 4% Games Workshop, and less than 1% Norwegian Airline. So my TFSA, I'll start with that. My TFSA is extremely simple. I have one investment in it. That is entirely just a bunch of shares of VFV. VFV is just an ETF. It's very low cost, and it tracks the Standard & Poor 500 or the S&P 500. Why do I hold this in the TFSA? That's because for me, when I look at my TFSA, this is where I want the absolute most diversified, most quote-unquote secure investment that I have. And that's because it's tax-free. So any gains that I make in this are not going to be taxable by the government. So for me, when I look at VFV, I see it is a representation of the overall American stock market, or at least the top 500 companies. And as the American stock market, knock on wood, continues to grow, having those gains be tax-free is super appealing to me. So that's why I put it in the TFSA. My RRSP holds XQQ and QQQ. It's a combination of the two ETFs in there. I've chosen XQQ and QQQ because the RRSP is not really tax sheltered at all. You pay penalties when you withdraw from it. You pay income tax when you withdraw from it, as again, I mentioned on a previous episode. And these stocks, this is really just to protect me from myself if I get scared to sell, if the market feels like it's going down. If I don't feel like I can access this money anyways because I'm not incentivized to withdraw from it, I'm not going to sell when I see the market going down and panic. And the NASDAQ 100 is just a little bit more aggressive of an investment. It's only 100 different stocks inside of the ETF, and it's very, very weighted towards tech. So it has a lot of open possibility for growth, but also for volatility. These are my two, pretty much the only two holds that I have in my registered accounts. Every year I do my best to max these out. And then once I've maxed those out, after that, I move on to my non-registered account, which is going to be a little bit more interesting for me to talk about. My non-registered account holds, brace yourself, XQQ and VFV as ETFs. I do have a lot of those in there. But in addition, I do have some individual stocks that I've picked out. I have five individual stocks I'm holding in my non-registered account. And although they do make up the vast minority of my portfolio, I think about 85% of my portfolio is split between XQQ and VFV. The remaining 15% is composed of shares of Visa, Microsoft, Apple, and then two slightly more exciting plays, in my opinion, Norwegian Airlines and Games Workshop. So I've picked Visa as a company to go long on primarily because I see us continuing as societies to really get further and further away from using cash and more into, first of all, the online retailers. There still is a lot of room for growth. There's a lot of items that people currently buy in stores that if you're selling exclusively online, pretty much everybody buys things with credit cards. And the other thing is Visa, they don't actually lend the money. All they do is facilitate these transactions. So I think that they have the opportunity to make a lot of money from the fees that they charge both vendors as well as the lenders who they're facilitating the transactions for. But they also don't really have, as far as I'm aware, a lot at stake. They're not the ones lending all the money. Visa works with a bank. The bank lends the money. Visa's just the middleman. So they have a lot of room to make money without having too much at risk. That's my perspective of it. This is not a very in-depth dive into Visa as a company. It's just why I've personally chosen to pick it. And you may listen to this and think, wow, this is a very, very surface level analysis. And I will not deny that. It is entirely surface level. All I wanted was to buy a few individual stocks. That's why it makes up such a small part of my portfolio. But I do see Visa continuing to grow. I bought into Microsoft about 2 years ago when I saw that they were competing for the JEDI contract with the U.S. National Defense. They had the JEDI contract for, I believe it was for cloud computing, and it was really between Amazon and Microsoft, and I actually bought into both Amazon and Microsoft because I said, why not? They're both two amazing companies, and if I bet on both horses, I'm going to win because the other company will still do well in the long run. This was pre-COVID. My Amazon shares grew pretty immensely, so I just sold them at a profit. And Microsoft didn't grow quite so much, but I'm still long on the company, so I kept the shares. I just wanted to harvest some of the gains from the Amazon to roll into ETFs. Finally, Apple. I love the company Apple. I switched to Samsung and a Rogue gaming computer. And ever since I made that switch, I regretted it immensely. Some people absolutely love their PC computers. They love their Samsung phones. But for me, I really like Apple, so I put some money into it. I will be honest though, these are in my non-registered accounts, and that is the primary reason that I haven't sold them. It's kind of dumb. It goes against what I said before, but I don't want to sell them and have to pay tax to just roll them into ETFs that also contain these stocks. So I just felt that I would take a little bit of more exposure and continue riding these stocks as we go. Now, the two slightly different or more out there companies that you may not have heard of that I've invested in are Norwegian Airlines and Games Workshop. These investments into Games Workshop and especially Norwegian Airline are super, super speculative, and that's why they make up such a small part of my portfolio. I bought into Norwegian Airlines, and this is hoping for a rebound for the company. I put in a very small part of my portfolio, I think less than 1%. It was really, I just had a little bit of spare change rattling around my portfolio, and I didn't want to buy into anything that I had already had. I wanted some exposure to the airline industry. And Norwegian is kind of a unique example, maybe not so unique these days with COVID, but essentially this is an airline where they're a low cost, long distance air travel provider, sort of like Air Canada, like Delta, except they're doing the low cost model. They got hit extremely hard in the past few years because of a combination of their business model not being able to weather the storm of COVID. But in addition to that, the majority of their fleet was made up of the 737 MAX, which is a Boeing aircraft. There were two absolutely horrible crashes in the past year or so. And I guess it was 2 years ago now, but the whole 737 fleet across the world was grounded. This effectively grounded the entire fleet of Norwegian Airlines, or the vast majority of it. Then 8 months later, COVID-19 happened and air travel itself got completely decimated. So if you look at the stock graph for Norwegian Airlines, it's gone from being worth about $50 American to 6 cents American over the span of maybe a year. And so I bought several shares, more than several. I bought a bunch of shares just on the hope that somehow the company avoids complete bankruptcy throughout the course of COVID. I know that the chances of that are extremely low, but this is 100% a gamble in my mind. If I lose all the money, that's okay. If I make a bunch of money, that'd be swell. Essentially, my idea is as airlines continue to fail, if Norwegian Airlines can hang on, there's going to be a lot of room for them to grow and take over the market share of other previously existing airlines. But I'm still holding on to the stock because I think it has a lot of room to grow if the company does survive COVID. And I cannot overstate enough how big of an if that is. This is not a recommendation to buy shares of Norwegian Airlines. I'm just justifying why I personally am currently holding Norwegian. The second company, Games Workshop. So, Games Workshop is a company that's pretty dear to my heart, not only because they've made a bunch of profits recently, but also because their business model is awesome and I have been a customer of Games Workshop for about the past 18 years. And I can provide extremely good anecdotal evidence for why their consumers and why their patrons are almost patrons for life. Their business model is very cool. They have been the best miniature makers or miniature manufacturers, whatever you want to call them, in the world for about the past 30 years. And what they do is they make tabletop war games. So these are strategy war games with little figures that you build them, you paint them, and then you play a turn-based strategy tabletop war game with. The games are called Warhammer and Warhammer 40K, and they do have a few other specialist games. Now, tabletop gaming itself, it's sort of like Dungeons and Dragons, if you want to imagine the sort of person who plays it and the type of game that it is. But this doesn't really seem like it would be a very big industry in the 21st century. We've got VR gaming, we've got Xbox, PC, PlayStation, Nintendo Switch, all sorts of digital gaming going on. But the intellectual property of Games Workshop is so strong, and there has been this real resurgence of nerd culture in the past 10 years. Their IP, intellectual property, really has like the depth and the breadth of something like the Marvel Cinematic Universe or like the Lord of the Rings universe. The fan base behind the Games Workshop products and the games that they make is one of the most devoted fan bases I've ever seen. Remember, they're in the business of making money, but they do it by creating a product that really, it locks its teeth into the fan base and it draws them in. They're making significant moves to take their IP mainstream through not through social media, but through more mainstream media like high budget TV shows. I think they have a show coming out on HBO, as well as some successful video game licenses. You may have heard of Space Marine, the video game. I am personally a Warhammer gamer, and I can attest to how devoted their fans are. Like, the models are called Plastic Crack by the members of the community. And this is such an accurate description. Like, if you know somebody who has been collecting or playing Warhammer for at least 2 or 3 years, I bet you they will have a closet in their house somewhere that is half full to completely full of unpainted models. And the life cycle of the Warhammer player is a really, really interesting thing. And this is getting pretty off topic for a podcast about investing and about my positions, but I'm getting into why I personally believe that Games Workshop has a great long potential. The life cycle of a Warhammer player it's actually really interesting. And I don't know how if the company was designed around this or if it just lucked into it, but I believe this is a huge part of why the company has the potential to continue growing in the long term. So first you have just a child who's walking through a mall or walking down the street, and they walk past a Games Workshop, that's the name of the store, and they drag their mom or their dad inside. The kid walks in, they get blown away by all the cool models and the well-modeled miniatured battlefields. The game is played on a 6-foot by 4-foot table that's modeled to look like a miniature version of a real battlefield that could be a city with buildings blown up or a forest with little armies fighting inside of the forest. This kid sees cooler older kids waging war on each other with these tiny miniature armies painted really well on this highly detailed battlefield. And then the employee working there offers this kid a free Space Marine model, really cool looking little model, and teaches the kid how to build and paint and even how to play the game. So the community is largely pretty welcoming, although a little bit neckbeardy. There can be a bit of gatekeeping. And that's the biggest real hurdle for this company is there is some gatekeeping that occurs in the community. But the kid gets really into the lore of the game. They daydream about Warhammer all day for about 2 to 4 years. They pester mom and dad to buy them models and paints. Their parents do it because it keeps their kid out of trouble. They're learning math because the game is based on dice, probability, and statistics. But this kid who's playing Warhammer, they don't have a lot of disposable income. They're only like 10, 12 years old, and they only get something once in a while for their birthday or if they did well on their report card. Eventually, this kid hits puberty, and they've got about a 70% chance, I just made up the statistic, of giving up the hobby because they discover girls or boys and decide to skateboard or snowboard because it's cooler and they start wanting to party. But don't worry, because this is an entirely normal part of the life cycle of a Games Workshop customer. This is when they are entering hibernation. 10 years go by, and this guy or girl happens to walk by a Games Workshop again, and they decide to stop by and check it out. They go back inside, and the nostalgia hits, but the only difference is now they have disposable income. The spark is reignited, and Games Workshop gets back their fully grown customer. The Warhammer IP is kind of like a little itch at the back of your brain. And once it's there, it's like it's always going to be there. There are 10-year-old kids who grow up to be 20-year-old Warhammer players, and they continue playing throughout their 40s and 50s. The game appeals to a massive breadth of people. And I've personally drifted away from Warhammer for years at a time. But I always end up going back and picking up some models after every few years because it's such an interesting and well-developed lore behind the hobby. If I was to draw a comparison between the fan base for Warhammer and that of another company, I'd say they're a little bit like the fan base for Apple products. So that's why I'm long on Games Workshop. It's kind of like investing in a cult. The cult will not lose its followers. They might leave for a while, but they come back. Anyways, holy gulai, that was a super long rant about why I'm long on Games Workshop. I think I just blew about 4 minutes into that microphone there. Keep in mind, my position in Games Workshop is not by any means a majority of my portfolio. It makes up a relatively small part of my portfolio, so I haven't lost the plot of long-term ETF investing. I have just decided to shake it up, and that's why I bought into Games Workshop about a year ago. When I'm talking about my portfolio, my goal is to invest a minimum of $1,000 a month. That's the minimum. I try to beat this. Pretty much as soon as my pay comes in, I immediately dump a chunk of it into the markets. It's important, though, to remember that a portfolio that I'm comfortable with is not necessarily going to be a good fit for you. So when I say that's a minimum, I always try to go above that, but I do not keep dry powder on hand. Dry powder is just slang for the money that somebody might save up planning to invest when the market crashes. It's what you save so that you have lots of money set aside when the market does dip. That's not something that I personally do because I don't think that I'm good at timing the market, not something I want to risk. When the market crashes, because it will happen eventually, I'll just continue investing $1,000 minimum per month. Although in the event of a market crash, I will definitely try to increase my contribution so that I'm buying even more shares as it goes down and then continuing to buy in on the way up. My position may be very different from yours. As a government employee, my job, knock on wood, is quite secure, especially when you compare it with something in the private sector. It's not on my mind that I'm worried about getting laid off next week, and even if I was to lose my job for some reason, there's a pretty solid severance package that I could use like an emergency fund in the case of job loss. In addition, I'm working towards a government pension, so my intention is to remain a government employee until I hit this pensionable age. I'm not saying this to brag or to try to get clout or whatever in the investing community. Moreover, it's just to give you a perspective of why I'm okay with taking so much risk in being exposed to the American markets. The USA could become a communist nation, totally give up the stock market, and I'd still have my government pension to fall back on. If you're in a position where a recession or a market crash may result in you losing your job and needing to sell your stocks to pay rent or to feed your kids, then you really should consider that eventuality when you're going into the markets. The economy is cyclical. The markets, unfortunately, don't just simply increase 10% year on year. They go up, they go down, they go sideways. Run the worst case scenario through your head when you're deciding how much exposure you're willing to have to the markets, because you don't want to paint yourself into a corner where the market crashes and that causes you to need to access your investment because you lost your job, because then they're going to be worth way less than when you bought in, and you're going to really paint yourself into a corner and screw yourself over. Essentially, what I'm trying to say is if you do the responsible things, you don't invest more money than you can afford to lose. And I'm not investing in the market because I think I'm going to lose money. Obviously, I'm doing it because I think I'm going to gain money. But I understand that every time that I put money in the market, I'm accepting that I will not touch that money for at least 10 years, maybe longer. If I was working a job with less job security, I would absolutely be building a much deeper emergency fund than I currently have. All right, so now you have a bit of a better idea of what my portfolio holds, at least the percentage weights of the various investments. It's not a crazy, wild, sexy day trader portfolio, nothing cool like that, but I like the stocks, I like the ETFs, And my personal belief is that in the long term, on average, these indices and these stocks will go up. Obviously, if I didn't think that, I wouldn't have bought in. Anyways, thank you for listening to episode 9 of the Diamond Hands podcast. If you have a question for me or ideas for future episodes, please contact me at brainlit.fi@gmail.com. I'm totally open to getting ideas for upcoming episodes, and I would love to address any questions that you as listeners might have. Join me next week for episode 10 of the Diamond Hands podcast, where I'm going to talk about some very concrete step-by-step decisions and steps that you can take in order to achieve financial success. Anyways, I'm Goldie, and I hope that you have a greener week this week than we did last week. Futures are looking good, so I'm pretty excited for that, but that's what last week looked like as well. So we'll see how it goes. Talk to you next week.